Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Suddenly, shots from the crowd.
Today, when John Paul II fell, the world reacted in terror. Speculation continues on the motivation for such an attack. When Pope Paul VI was attacked in 1970, the would-be assassin was determined to be demented, irrational. Today's attacker may also be demented, but his motivations may have been political, an attempt to terrorize the world.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, what a moment that was. Some of you may remember it vividly. Maybe you were too young. 40 years ago today, the world was shocked. They were astounded. They were aghast. As news came out that Pope John Paul II had been shot in St. Peter's Square, and he was raced to the Policlinico Gemelli, the Rome's hospital. In producing a film on Divine Mercy, I told the story of John Paul II's assassination. In fact, in my new book, I revisit that again because there was a would-be assassin there who should have taken the life of John Paul II. Now, this was 81. John Paul became Pope at 78, so just a short time. But you got to remember historically what was happening in Poland at that time and what impact John Paul II had both as a bishop and a cardinal when it came to communism. When that gun rang out and John Paul was shot, the world wondered what would happen. He was in the back of this car being raced to the hospital, and he already told those in the vehicle with him he forgave his assassin. But he's so struck by that. Here's the Holy Father. What a man. What a saint, right? What a great, great Pope. As he's bleeding potentially to death, these may be the last few hours or minutes of his life, he forgives this assassin who filled him with a gunshot, right? He cried out to his mother. Of course, John Paul's mother died when he was very young, but he was calling out to the Blessed Mother over and over again. Of course, he went there, and doctors would later say it was absolutely baffling. It was a miracle because he should have been dead. The trajectory this bullet took just absolutely baffled the physicians. The way it entered, it missed all vital organs. It looked like a hand guided the bullet. And that's what John Paul said. He said one finger, when he was recovering, pulled the trigger, and another guided the bullet. It was the Blessed Virgin Mary protecting his life. And, you know, when he finally recovered, and when he was in recovery, he asked for two things, which I found fascinating. One, the third secret of Fatima. We'll talk a little bit about that today. You know, why would John Paul II ask for the third secret of Fatima after his assassination attempt? He's only been Pope for a couple of years now. And you know what the other thing was? It was the Diary of St. Faustina. Diary of St. Faustina. When he finally recovered and he got out of the hospital bed, of course, he took the very bullet that he was shot with and he put it in a crown in the Mother of God. You can see that bullet today. It's in the crown of the Blessed Mother. If you ever go to Fatima, you can see the crown and the actual bullet that pierced John Paul and almost took his life. Of course, he'd put that statue on the border of, you know, communist Poland and the Soviet Union, and we would see the Iron Curtain just a couple years later, as we know, collapse. And that's without a bullet being fired. Maybe the bullet there and his suffering helped to bring that about. But this all seemed to come out of the blue, didn't it? You know, the Pope had clearly made powerful enemies because he was constantly critical of Marxism, of communism, of Marxist communism. So 2 years earlier, he had gone back to his native Poland there, and you probably remember this. This is such a powerful moment, one of the brightest moments, I think, of the 20th century, and in front of at least a million people, which included the puppet communist leaders of Moscow, those puppets that they had put into place. John Paul stood up there as an apostle of Christ, right? And he was clear. He didn't pull punches. He proclaimed the gospel. He proclaimed the freeing gospel of Jesus Christ. And you know how the people responded? And I love this. This is such a great moment. They began to chant, "We want God. We want God. We want God. We want God. And they chanted it over and over and over again for a long time. And it was at that point that the Soviets knew that this man, he could not be contained. And if he was not dealt with, their entire political system would probably collapse. That's how powerful John Paul was. He played these guys like they were puppets. Why? He had the Holy Spirit on his side, right? He was a man of prayer, and he was chosen for that particular moment in history. So it was probably at this time that Moscow contacted the Bulgarians, who then hired a Turkish assassin. His name was Mehmet Ali Atça. And it was a man who escaped from a Turkish prison after killing a left-wing journalist back in 79. Obviously, the assassination did not go as planned. When Mehmet was there, he had actually, believe it or not, three other conspirators. And one of those was supposed to set off a diversionary bomb. That guy panicked. He actually fled. And instead of fleeing to the Bulgarian embassy under the cover of the confusion, what ended up happening was Mehmet was tackled by a nun after he fired that shot. I love that. God bless her, right? He pulls the trigger. He hits John Paul II. Instead of taking off, this nun sees this guy with a gun. What'd she do? She takes him down. She tackled him. And then the head of Vatican security came as well. And, of course, you know, John Paul II pulled through his surgery, as you know. That happened 40 years ago today. It happened May the 13th. It happened on the great feast of Our Lady of Fatima. There's no coincidence, is there? The Pope, of course, credited Our Lady to saving his life. And I believe more than ever that she and the prayers of so many through the rosary, through the Blue Army, helped to bring defeat the Red Army of communism. I'm joined today by a man who intimately knows the life of John Paul II. He's written about him. He authored a book called 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. And he wrote a great article. He actually contacted me just a couple of days ago. He said, Drew, there's a bombshell news report out regarding who was behind the assassination of John Paul II. I said, well, you got to come on the Feast of Fatima. We have to talk about it. We put that article, by the way, up on our Twitter page. So if you're following us at Drew Mariani Show, and I hope you are, you can read that. It'll be there for you. And of course, you can check him out at novamedia.us. It's always good to talk. Longtime friend, Patrick Novakovsky. Hey, Patrick, good afternoon.
Drew, so good to be with you again.
Thank you. 40 years, man. It's amazing how time flies. The Soviet Union, of course,
it really does,
has collapsed. Mehmet Ali Atça is out of prison. And believe it or not, correct me if I'm wrong on this, I heard he became a Catholic. Is that true?
He did become a Catholic, yeah. And he actually did express the desire to become a priest. And he placed white roses on John Paul II's tomb. I honestly think he seems to have mental issues, so he was not accepted into the seminary. I think he's fully repented for his crime.
Yeah, you know, but that's the power of John Paul II, though, isn't it? I mean, he is a saint, and what a powerful moment. If people have not seen that moment when John Paul II, he's now in prison, Mehmet, John Paul goes and meets him, and the cameras are outside the prison cell, the door's ajar, and you just see him leaning in, talking to him very gently, very close. He grabs this guy's arm, and there's this extension of mercy and love, and I thought, how can you not want to become Catholic after meeting John Paul II? I know you've met him. I have met him. And after meeting him, I mean, there's when you rub up and you brush against sanctity, it makes you want to become holy. And I was always so impressed by that. But there's still a lot of mysteries around this assassination attempt. And one of those was who paid him to do this. So bring us back. Tell us the story. Was this a Soviet plot? You know, bring us back in time and maybe lay out the scenario of what unfolded.
Sure, and I honestly can't take credit for exposing this. This is the work of Paul Kengor, who wrote A Pope and a President and The Divine Plan, biographies on John Paul II. He also wrote the foreword to my book. So Paul put this all together.
Yeah,
he after the assassination attempt, the Italian government launched a massive investigation into the who orchestrated this, because it was actually very well planned. Aliaga was an expert marksman. He never missed, and he missed. But like you said earlier, the hand of the Blessed Mother guided the bullet and saved the life of the Holy Father. They found the Bulgarian connection very quickly, and it seemed to just kind of end there. Ronald Reagan, who was following this very closely, 6 weeks earlier had been felled by an assassin's bullet, survived, and had a very close kinship with the Holy Father. One of the reasons they both were someone tried to kill them. Reagan instructed the CIA to do its own investigation on top of the one being done by the Italian authorities. Now, all of these documents are still classified, but Paul, through his connections, found people who told him that the trail led back to the GRU, which is the military intelligence arm of the Soviet government in Moscow. So he put it together very well in his book, and my article basically laid that out and said, why did John Paul II and Ronald Reagan not tell the world who was behind this when they knew? And my conclusion is that had they exposed the Russian government, the Soviets, for doing this, it would have actually thrown off their plan to end Soviet-style communism in Eastern Europe without a shot being fired, except for, of course, the one that almost took John Paul's life.
So here's the thing. Did he know before the assassination attempt that the Soviets they had a plan to take his life, or did that come to knowledge only after he was shot?
I have no doubt that he knew his life was in danger. When he stepped out for the first time in June of 79 to the adoring crowds in Poland, and he knew what he was doing. He stepped into a lion's den with a smile on his face and his hands in prayer. And that was the first crack in the Iron Curtain, when he went into Poland for the first time as Pope. And the Soviets, the communists, were scared. They were scared of him because he was preaching the truth boldly, and the people were roaring, "We want God," as you earlier said. That threw a big scare into the Soviet Union. They're like, this guy could bring us down. He supported Solidarity, the labor movement, and he was not backing down. They tried to intimidate him. It didn't work. So their thought was, we need to take him out, as you also said earlier. So I think that when he was sitting in his hospital bed and could finally wrap his head around what had just happened to him, he knew. I think he knew in his heart of heart at that time. It was later proven, and he found out for sure. But who else would want to take out the Pope?
Yeah,
it was pretty simple.
It's an amazing story. However, I thought, Ochka, he claimed that in his memoirs that it was not the Soviets or the Bulgarians who were behind this, but Iran, the Ayatollah Khomeini. Where did that come from? Is it just his mental disturbance, or do you think there's any merit to that?
Yeah, I think that it's probably disingenuous. I suspect that if Aliaga, he still has people today who want him silenced, and he thought that this would maybe throw the scent off. But Iran didn't like John Paul II, but they were not going to step out and have him assassinated. Right. They just didn't have the motivation to do that.
Right. So why has there never been a full exposure, a full investigation of this whole thing? Any reason for that?
Well, the investigation's been done. Why the documents are still classified 40 years later is a bit of a mystery, but we don't know exactly what's in them. Paul Kangor talked to people who had seen them and verified them on the QT, but they have not seen the light of day, and we may never live to see the day when they are fully exposed to the world. I think U.S.-Russia relations are very important, and this could open up old wounds. So that's probably why they're still classified.
Well, I'll tell you what. Hang out with me. I'm going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we can talk more. I'd love to revisit that encounter of John Paul II in Poland. What happened after he was shot and why he wanted the third secret of Fatima. We can talk a little bit about the third secret as well. Was John Paul II truly the Pope of that vision? So a lot to get into. My guest today, Patrick Novakovsky, author of 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. If you want to join us, I'll give you an opportunity. He's going to be with me just a few minutes in the next segment. Feel free to dial in. 888-914-9149. We're back right after this.
The voice of reason for our nation. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
At the Vatican today, a shocked quiet. 10,000 or more had come to receive the blessing of Pope John Paul. Instead, amongst the cheering and the peal of bells announcing the arrival of the Pope, they heard gunfire and saw the Pope turn pale and collapse, bloody, into the arms of his aides. Pope John Paul II had been shot.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
A moment that shocked the world. Here this is, this beloved Pope being shot. Who was behind it? How did he possibly survive? Today we remember that assassination. It was 40 years ago. It happened on the great feast of Our Lady of Fatima. And this was a Pope who was intimately connected to not just the Fatima message, but to the third secret, to divine mercy, and so much more. I'm joined this afternoon by Patrick Novakovsky, author of 100 Ways That John Paul II Changed the World. And if you want a signed copy of that book, you can get it from the author. Just go to booksbypatrick.com. That's booksbypatrick.com, and Patrick will sign you one and send it on out. I want to get back to the assassin, because I am intrigued by it. I think mercy transforms the most hardened heart, and it has a power to pierce. As you know, I know your deep love of divine mercy as well. Here's this trained assassin who should have easily taken John Paul out. He miraculously survives. He's in prison. And you and I were talking in the break. You said, you know, the Italian government, the officials there, they were going to probably execute him for what they did to John Paul II. But John Paul did something. Why don't you share with everyone what he did?
Yeah, he reached out to the Italian government and said, no, don't even keep him in prison. Pardon him. Let him go. Which is mind-boggling, right? Here's a man who tries to kill you. It's one thing to forgive him, but, right, to say, I don't even want him incarcerated. I mean, that's mind-boggling. And I think it was like 15, 20 years later, he was pardoned and set free, but he was sent back to Turkey to face charges for other crimes that he had committed. So, and he since served his, as we said earlier, he served his time and he is now a free man, which is a miracle in itself. But, I mean, that's taking mercy to the extreme when you say, don't even lock the guy up.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love it. It's one of my favorite moments, too, seeing John Paul extend mercy to his assassin.
His visit in prison, That was John Paul's idea. He brought the cameras in. He said, don't put handcuffs on him. Leave the prison door open. And he brought the cameras in, not just to show that mercy is possible, but to show that mercy is necessary.
Yeah. And here's a Pope so connected to the message of mercy, you know, so connected. Mm. When he was shot, of course, and he was in the Policlinico Gemelli there in Rome, recovering, he asked for two things, the diary of St. Faustina, of course, because he was the Pope who would ultimately overturn, he was a cardinal who would overturn the ban and ultimately raise Faustina to the altars. I know you were, I think, there for the canonization. But he also asked for the third secret of Fatima. Let's just talk about those two things for a moment. You know, he seems a chosen Pope for two of the biggest spiritual movements of the 20th and 21st century, of the millennium, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so May 13th, 1917, Our Lady appears to the children, and part of her message was, if this is not corrected, Russia will spread her errors throughout the world. This is the beginning of the Russian Revolution. So they hadn't begun to spread their errors, but then fast forward to 1981, on that same day, Russia tries to take out the Pope, and Our Lady spares his life. I mean, that is... This should be a feature film because the intrigue, the drama, the everything is just so amazing, almost hard to believe.
So, you know, John Paul II, in terms of the vision of the third secret, do you see him as the Pope of the third secret?
Yeah, so he actually asked Sister Lucia, and this is a funny thing. Had I been elected Pope, the first thing I would have done is said, bring me the third secret of Fatima.
Yeah, right.
He waited like 3 years. You're elected president. Yeah, tell me about Area 51.
Yeah,
I
right.
want to know that right
Are there
now.
UFOs? I'm the president. I want to
right,
know.
Right, right. So he asked for the third secret. He asked for Faustina's diary, and they brought him the secret. He probably prayed, pondered it, and he... But he did talk to Sister Lucia, the lone surviving seer at Fatima, and said, is this the third secret? Is that what happened? And the third secret was essentially a bishop dressed in white is struck down by arrows. And in this sense, it was bullets, not arrows. But Sister Lucia said, yeah, this is what we saw. This matches up. This is it.
Wow.
So, and he survived.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of controversy over what was in the third secret and whether or not it was fully revealed, you know, and whether or not John Paul consecrated the world to the Immaculate Heart, or is it Russia to the Immaculate Heart, as was requested. And of course, Sister Lucia re-echoed that and says it wasn't done perfectly, but yes, it was done. In fact, coming up in a few minutes, we'll dive into the third secret and take a look at that in greater detail. But right now, if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Patrick Nowakowski, author of 100 Ways John Paul II Changed the World. He just wrote a new article talking about some information that, you know, was off the radar for a long time regarding who was actually behind the assassination attempt. What's the title of your article, by the way?
It is, you know, they
like
gave
me.
It a different title than I did, but keep talking. I'll
Jake,
find
what's
it.
The title? We put it up on Twitter. I just don't have it in front of me. What's the name of it? Everybody's scrambling right now to get the title of your article. I love it. But it's like my wife when I go home after the show. So what you talk about today? I'm like, you know, honey, I can't remember. You know, it's like...
Okay, here it is. Here it is. It's John Paul II Assassination Attempt, The Secrets Behind the Shooting 40 Years Ago.
All right, well, there you go.
And they'll find it under, it's under the opinion section. You have to click on opinion, scroll down a little bit. You'll see it. It was published early this morning.
That's great. We also link to it, so if you're in your car at Drew Mariani Show, I'll take it right there. I want to go back to Poland for a moment. Again, we talk about John Paul and how amazing he was and what a pivotal role he played on so many things, everything from Fatima to Divine Mercy to the fall of communism. But that moment in Poland, I want to go back to that, because Ronald Reagan and him really were allies in this battle against the evil empire, if you will. Tell me about the visit to Poland, and I understand Reagan was watching what happened there, and he had a very deliberate response. Let's go back to Poland. You know, it was a million people plus, but you were telling me it's a million at every stop. Paint that picture.
Yeah, pretty much. So your audience will remember this. Throughout the 20th century, there were two Americans who were really adamant and public figures talking about communism and its errors, Fulton Sheen and Ronald Reagan. It was their passion. So in 1979, John Paul II, newly elected, goes back to Poland for the first time, and Ronald Reagan's at his ranch in California, not yet elected president. He's watching this, and he understood the evil empire, the Soviet Union, better than most Americans. He said to himself and to his friends, the Pope is the key. The Pope is the key to bringing down the Iron Curtain and ending Soviet-style communism in Eastern Europe. And so he's elected, and one of the first things he does is extend diplomatic relations with the Holy See. Had never been done before. There had been a little bit of flurry of diplomatic activity, but he actually appointed the very first ambassador, the U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. And it's because of John Paul II, because he knew that collaborating with this brilliant, articulate, passionate, charismatic man, they could do it together. He knew it. And Reagan called it the Divine Plan, another title of Paul Kengor's book. But that was Reagan's phrase.
Yeah. So we're 40 years out from this. Have people forgotten about this event and the fact that, you know, it was Soviet, it was the Soviet Union, it was communism that ordered his death? You know, I had seen a report somewhere just a couple of weeks ago saying that most kids today, you know, 18-year-olds and somewhere in that demographic, they don't even know who John Paul II is. So, I find that hard to believe, but that's the reality. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I wrote the book primarily for young people who, I mean, people graduating today were little children when he died 16 years ago.
Yeah.
So they were babies, and they don't remember John Paul II. They probably barely remember Pope Benedict. So I mean, his impact, his thumbprint on the 20th century, one of the most influential people easily of the 20th century, and he literally did change the world. And we need to remember not only what he taught, but what he did. He understood Soviet-style communism. He understood Marxism very well. He spent most of his life talking about it, exposing its errors. And I think that's why he connected with Fatima so well, because that was what Our Lady wanted. And that's what our Lord wanted when he appeared to Faustina and talked about divine mercy, that these Fatima and mercy are so integral to what the church is all about, was all about in the 20th century, and really needs to be about in the 21st century.
Yeah, so if we can, just I have a few minutes left, but I'd love to get your take on John Paul II and divine mercy. He lived through the horrors of communism. He saw Nazism. He saw the evils of the 20th century, and it was a dark, bloody century, to say the least. He saw the gulags. He saw all the horrors that unfolded there. And yet he saw mercy really as the solution and the remedy, and the very first saint that he canonizes for the third millennium is Saint Faustina, which I think is very, very telling. If you could just expand a little bit on this great mercy pope.
Yeah, well, he was a young priest, and divine mercy was spreading like crazy through Poland, but it was under Nazi occupation and then communist occupation. And there were some errors in the translations that got out, so the Holy See said, we need to stop. We need to stop spreading divine mercy according to Saint Faustina. Than just Sister Faustina. He appointed in the 1960s, he opened her cause for canonization as Archbishop of Krakow, and he told his top theologian, I want you to delve into this diary. Now, you got to understand, she had 3 years education. She wrote like a little child, and there are lots of, people didn't think that there was anything to it, but it really had an impact on his theologian. It actually transformed his thinking about God. 6 months to the day before John Paul was elected, the Holy See lifted the ban.
Wow.
And so he's intimately connected with Faustina. And people say, oh, it's just a Polish devotion. It is that, but it's for the whole world. It came out of Poland. John Paul came out of Poland, so did Faustina. But this is the time for mercy, according to what Jesus told her. And the time for mercy, I think, it's going to come to an end, and then there's going to be justice. So we need to be very aware of that in what we're praying for and who we're praying for and how we're praying, because time is short for all of us.
As you know, that's what the Lord told Saint Faustina. He says, before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior. But woe to those of you who do not recognize this time of my visitation. Powerful words from the resurrected Christ to the first saint of the new millennium, that's for sure. Hey, Patrick, thank you for your work. I always enjoy our conversations. It's great hanging out with you and talking with you. If people want to get connected one more time, best way to do that?
Yeah, find me at booksbypatrick.com or catholicpublicist.com.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk again soon. Keep writing, okay?
I will.
All right.
Thank you, Drew.
You got it. That's Patrick Nowakowski. I need to take a short pause. News and headlines are straight ahead. When we come back, we'll talk Third Secret of Fatima. John Paul released it. This is a famous Fatima day, the day that the secret was revealed. Was the Fatima secret altered? We'll look at that and more.